Welcome along to the Good Glow. I have such a good podcast for us all today. Buckle up. This one is going to give so many of us breakthroughs. I just know it. Before I get into it, I just wanted to thank Yoplait for supporting the Good Glow this season. This is the last episode, and I am so grateful to them for being just such a brilliant sponsor this season. And I've absolutely loved working with the team. At Yoplait, quality is their passion, and their commitment to health and nutrition starts with the sourcing of ingredients. Three core values: pleasure, simplicity, and joy help Yoplait deliver healthy, delicious, and nutritious pots of enjoyment to their customers. So let's talk about Skyr. Well, you'll spot it in all supermarkets across the country. It's a great nutritious yogurt. It's a creamy Icelandic recipe. Like Greek yogurt, it's packed full of protein, fat-free, and Yoplait Skyr has only one ingredient, which is milk. I love their big pots, and Skyr Natural 850 gram is available across stores nationwide. So where do I begin with Saad Simone? Well, he's a spiritual guide, a thought leader, and I was first introduced, or he first came on my radar about 18 months ago when my friend Becca Meegan said, "Georgie, look this guy up on Instagram, he's changing the world." So here we are 18 months later. It's taken us this long to get Sa on the Good Glow because he is so busy, he's got so much going on, but I always believe in the timing of things. And I believe that this podcast has come along at the perfect time for us all. So Sa says, after addiction and trauma, he was called into silence and service, developing a deep understanding of the body-mind connection, which is such a gift, which he's now passing on to the world. He's dedicating his life to helping people heal. He's got a decade of Buddha practice under his belt, and today we're talking about so much that's going to help us heal ourselves and help ourselves in our lives. He says, feel your feelings, no stories needed. It's really interesting, so let's get into it. Sa, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. I can't believe I'm looking at you right now and feeling your energy, and thank you so much for being with us all the way over here in Ireland today.
Truly honored to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Where in the world are you?
I'm in Los Angeles, California.
Okay. Does that feel like a good place for you to be right now?
It's the right place for me to be for now.
Yeah, I see you like cycling your bike, eating your healthy food. The sun is shining. It's just, oh, so beautiful. Tell my listeners, if you don't mind sharing, just how did you get to where you are today? Like this spiritual awareness you have, the thoughts and the practices you share with the world so generously. What's your story?
Thank you for bringing that into the mix. So my story is, I was working in fashion, and in 2012, I was bought out of the company. And the betrayal and the heartbreak of having two of my best friends say, I no longer want to do this lifelong journey that I thought we're doing, this deep creative project that we're doing with you anymore, it broke my heart so much. So I left New York, went to Florida, and where my family lives, and it was living at the time. And got this little beach house, so I had access to the ocean. And first, one thing came up, which was very alarming. I've always had a lot of friends, but I didn't have true, meaningful friendship. And leaving New York after that happened was very alarming to me. It really showed me that all my friendships were transactional, that they weren't meaningful and deep, and that people weren't there for me because I wasn't there for them in this really heart-centered way. So I went to Florida, and because nobody would take me in, nobody would give me a job. It was this like really awful time in my life. And then in Florida, I started to research, what is well-being? What is peace? What is happiness? Like genuinely curious, what is this? Like, how do I free myself from addiction? How do I free myself from suicidal ideation? How do I free myself from constantly being anxious? And to be honest, I didn't even have language for anxiety, depression, and addiction. I had no context for any of that. I thought that we were just constantly feeling like shit, and everybody was too. And that was just kind of like the way we did it. And to be fair, pain is inevitable, right, in human life. But there is a way of relating to pain, which I later come to learn and I later come to educate people on it, pain is inevitable. Suffering is a choice. We get to choose how we relate to the inevitable pain of life. This is the teachings of the Buddha. I didn't make that up. It's something that has thousands of years of reference and factual practice that helps people. So I'm doing all this research, and then one thing leads to another. It's all leading me east. It's all leading me to India, to Nepal, to these gurus, to these saints, to these people who've lived in caves, who have these ashrams, who lived in these monasteries. And I was like, okay, cool. I guess I have to do that. So then I fly to India in the spring of 2014, and I do a 10-day silent retreat. This is 10 years ago now. And during that 10-day silent retreat, we were meditating on death, on our own death. We were visualizing what we would feel like to die today. What would it feel like to die right now? For 3 whole days, we're spending hours every evening doing that. And that broke me open. And then later that fall, in 2014, I did a 30-day meditation retreat. And during that 30-day was when I really cracked open. And then in that 30 days, when I decided to take refuge, decided to like take the path seriously. And in between that, I ended up being able to sit with the Dalai Lama and sit in his teachings and really understand more and more what it's like to be in the presence of someone who is so embodied, so relaxed, so alive. And being in this presence, I understood that our presence can non-verbally, by doing nothing, you know, big air quotes here, help people. Because when I was in his presence, I was able to feel deeply relaxed. And I was like, this is weird. I'm not drunk or high right now. Why am I feeling so relaxed? It's because of the presence of this master who has devoted his life to being so grounded, being so in contact with his breath, that the whole room felt it. It relaxed everybody. And we all have those people in our lives, right? That relax us, that calm us. So I wanted that. So between that 10-day silent retreat, meeting the Dalai Lama, and doing that 30-day silent retreat, that was the catalyst to me seeking the path. And now, you know, coming up to 10 years of solid practice and having gone back to India over 12 times, I found what sets me free. And in my own freedom, I'm actually able to help other people become free. So it's a deeply sustainable life project that I found myself in, you know, that's the short version.
Wow. And you said there you connected with what sets you free. Is that like silence or being at one with yourself?
All of that comes. But I think the biggest thing for me was I was so afraid of silence. I was so afraid of meeting the parts of myself that I had done a great job at rejecting, neglecting, avoiding, and distracting myself. I had built a beautiful life to the external world of what seems like a success, what seems like happiness at that point. And I was really young too. So it seemed like, wow, this is the perfect dream of being an immigrant to America and be able to be successful. But the underneath the current was I had become a master at distracting myself. I had become a master at running away from being in silence, which means what you said, being at one with myself. I had no idea who I really was if it wasn't for what people said I was, for what things I had to show for, the amount of money I had, the way I dressed, the job, the title, all the things. So during that time in Nepal, in silence, and during that time in silence in India, I really arrived at a point where I was flashed in my mind's eye a highlight reel of all the ways that I had hurt myself, all the ways that I had been hurt by other people, and all the ways that I had hurt others. So it was this like three trifecta of hurt, trifecta of pain had like engulfed me. And so I had to learn about compassion. I had to learn about forgiveness. I had to learn all these new ways of relating to myself and to others that I had not been trained in. Had no clue what it was. And silence is the catalyst to that. It's the only way for you to actually see, you know, and understand yourself.
What do you say to people who are afraid of silence? Because I was that. I ran for 32 years away from the silence and then ended up very ill. So what do you say to people? Because we're often so afraid of silence, but then in the silence, we get the answers and we help ourselves and it brings good things to our life.
That's right. You named it. It helps us and it brings, it really is the catalyst to a happy life. It's happiness is based on how often we, how like willing are we to just be okay with silence? And the silence is really comes forth from our capacity to be at one with our breath. And when we are in connection with our breath, we are in our bodies. When we are in our bodies, we're not judging life. We're not criticizing life. We're not pathologizing every feeling. We're not giving meaning to every feeling. We are in this like okayness where our dualistic approach to life, where things are good and bad, happy or sad, they kind of fade away. It just kind of is. And not because certain things aren't really bad or aren't really good. It's not that. There's just an undercurrent of understanding of what's really going on, besides the thinking of what's really going on, besides our preconceived ideas of what's really going on. So people who are afraid of silence, the best thing for you to do is make friends with your breath. And the simple way for you to do this, I invite you to like put a song on, maybe a rock and roll song or a beautiful dance song, whatever, and shake your body for like 3 whole minutes for the duration of a song. Shake it like you mean it. Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it so much. And then full stop and maybe sit down or lay down and then feel the breath breathing your body. Where do you feel the breath most alive in your body in that very moment? And it may be the tip of your nose, your upper lip, back of your throat, point in the chest, point in the belly. Where do you feel the breath most vividly? And when you come in close contact with your breath and you start to really rest your awareness in the breath and really become one with the breath, you have now re-entered your body. You're inhabiting your body. When you are in your body, you are in the present moment because the body's always in the now. The body's always here. It's the mind that drives us into the future or the past, which then makes us believe that being in a present moment, engaging in silence won't be good, will be the catalyst to our misery, which is the polar opposite, right? So I think shaking and reconnecting with the feeling of the breath in the body is a great way for people to start to engage in silence. So this is kind of like a little glimpse in like what engaging in presence, engaging in silence could help you is just be here and now. When you're here and now, your connection to life is sustainable, is replenishing, it's nurturing. You actually know how to engage with friends. You actually know how to engage with other people.
Yeah, I love that. Because I think when I actually embrace silence and get present, like I'm even picturing myself like sitting at the sea, you know, just with my own thoughts. And then I'm kind of like, oh yeah, everything is okay. You know, why am I so mean to myself? Why am I so hard on myself? Like, look at, I'm alive and I'm here and I'm breathing and it's such a gift. So yeah, when we're just on to the next thing, running, and then just letting the thoughts just take over. It's just so beautiful to embrace silence and to embrace each other, because I know, you know, your new book is all about togetherness and connection. And I feel like the Good Glow, like with my guests with the Good Glow, they always come into my life when I really need them. I would sometimes lock myself away, and lots of people can't really understand that. Like, I find it hard to connect sometimes because I think my mind is so busy and I'm so frozen sometimes by my to-do list. And I'm not actually doing anything when I'm sitting in my house by myself, but the thoughts of like everything is just too much. So to add people into that equation for me sometimes just feels like it's not the right thing for me. But you're going to change my mind on that.
I will. And it's an honor to help you do that, to support you in that. And it's so true, because I speak about this in the book, Spiritually We, that we have to clean up our inner homes. We have to take care of our inner sanctuary so we feel good about inviting people over, which means we have to make peace with our darkness. We have to make peace with our past. We have to make peace with all the little aspects of our biography that we deem bad, shameful, ugly, all the parts of our story that we never want to tell anybody. We have to make peace with it. Because if we don't make peace with it, if we don't offer love and care and compassion and empathy to the parts of ourselves that we deem as bad, how can we ever offer that to other people? How can we ever even wonder if other people will be okay with these aspects of ourselves that we are not even okay with? We are seeking other people to validate that we are good and that we are okay when we haven't even done that ourselves. We are constantly running away from, you know, making peace with our biographies, bringing love and care to all these little aspects of ourselves. So there is a practice in the book that I call two things come to mind. So many things come to mind because you're speaking about something so vital here. First, having a practice of stopping when we feel frozen, when we feel discombobulated, when our thoughts are running haywire. And remember this, overthinking is underfeeling. When the mind is going haywire, crazy, wild, nonstop, discursive thinking, there's a feeling in the body that we're not addressing. So overthinking is underfeeling. And feelings arrive in a body, and then the mind, the thinking process, claims the feelings, gives it a narrative, gives it a meaning, and then we speak and we act based on that. But the kickstart of this momentum are the feelings. But oftentimes, we have forgotten how to understand and feel and be with our feelings. We now think our feelings. We don't feel our feelings. So the practice of stopping when you're losing your shit, when you're feeling frozen, you don't want to invite anybody in, is to fully stop and not engage with the stories in the mind, but go to the body. Where in the body am I not feeling? Where is the feeling in my body? Where in my body is the grief? Where in my body is the anger? Where in my body is the terror? Where in my body is the confusion? Where in my body is the abandonment? Be with the feeling, drop the story. Be with the feeling, drop the story. This is like a foundational teaching for a life of freedom. So really important, because what happens is we hold back from connecting to other people, as you so vulnerably and beautifully shared, because we're so busy inside. But when you stop and you have a practice of dropping the stories and being with the feelings, you'll notice something beautiful and miraculous happens. Feelings change, because all of life is impermanent. All of life is changing. We are never patient enough with our feelings to see them change. We're never patient with anything really in our lives to watch it change, to watch it grow, to watch it transform. We, in the Amazon Prime world, we want things tomorrow. We want things today. We want things delivered with the apps that we have on our phones. We want it now. We want it in this very moment. And we have no patience. We've lost our muscle of patience, has become atrophied.
So say you're at that point, you're like, okay, I'm going to be with my feelings. How do you do that?
It's so simple. Where in your body do you feel the feeling? You know how when you hit your knee, or you feel you have a stomachache, or your heart's pounding, or you have butterflies in your stomach, or you have a neck pain, or you say to someone, oh, this person is a pain in the ass. Or you say someone is a pain in my neck, or like you give me a headache, or you make me sick. All those things, we've all said this, or about other people, right? About the world.
So sorry that I asked you the question that you already answered, but just to get it into my head.
No, it's so important, because it's a question that a lot of people, it's so simple that it goes over people's heads. It's so simple what I'm saying, that it goes over your head. It's the same way that we are able to name what we're feeling when we feel physical pain. We need to know how to feel emotional pain, emotional discomfort. And emotional discomfort shows up in a body in the same way as a physical sensation. It's just a different texture. We just have to get better at knowing what's going on in our bodies. And the only way to do that, it goes back to how we opened. How connected to silence are you? How connected to stillness are you? Because if you're not still, if you're not in your body, if you're not relaxed in your inner world, it's impossible to actually feel the grief in your stomach, to feel the sadness in your heart, to feel the stress in your neck, to actually bring your attention there. you know? And what we need to do is just bring our awareness there. And I invite people who are starting it, instead of doing it with only your mind's eye, doing it with your mind silently, invisibly, do it with your hand. Where in your body is the past living in you right now? And let the body communicate to you, because it will.
So good, because you're reminding me, I went to therapy after, in my recovery, and I was in a meditation with my amazing therapist, Berna, and she said to me, and I was talking about, you know, being afraid and, you know, all of this, all of these things, and talking about my past. And then she said, and Georgie, where do you feel it? Where do you feel it? And in the meditation, my hand banged onto my chest, and that is where my cancer was.
Wow. Wow. There, you named it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Remember this now and bring this to the everyday. When you're washing dishes, what are you feeling when you are washing dishes? When you are walking your dog, where are you feeling what you're feeling when you're doing whatever it is that you're doing? And now this then goes to the next level. When you are in conflict with your lover, with your friend, with your partner, you know, with your family, when you're able to communicate what you feel, when you feel, without blaming another person, because you know that that feeling is in your body and no one put it there to begin with, that level of responsibility that no one can make me feel anything because those feelings were already inside of me to begin with, that exchange, that relationship, that dynamic has created the cause and conditions for that feeling that was already in me to sprout, to come up. So can I be with that feeling while I engage with another person? And being with the feeling while I engage with another person means that you actually have to get good at naming. Right now, I feel really sad. Right now, this experience is actually bringing up really, really sad feelings for me. This experience is bringing sad feelings for me, communicating that to other people. It's really vital that when we are having conflict with other people, we really become a master at saying, when this happens, I feel this. When I feel this, I think this. When I think this, I say this. And when I say this, when I want to say this, I do this. Inviting people into this deeply vulnerable space of saying, wow. When this happens, I feel so sad. And when I feel so sad, I think I'm a bad person. When I think I'm a bad person, I say really unkind things to myself and I say unkind things to other people. And when I feel, think, and say these things, all I want to do is unalive myself or drink myself to sleep or eat myself to sleep or whatever. You know, we that invite people into that place, bring people in to that depth of authenticity, of connection, because we are so in need of connection. When we feel lonely, what do? We distract. Our lives are built in distraction. When we feel hungry, what do? We eat. When we feel tired, we take a nap. When we feel depressed, we go work out a little bit. We get some sunshine. But when we feel lonely, we don't interpret it as a biological need like food and water and sunlight, you know, and rest. It's so wild that this is not talked about. That's why I wrote this book, because all this information has to be out there. This is factual truth. This is spiritual evidence of, this is spiritual truth that science now has evidence for.
A big thanks to Yoplait Skyr for supporting the Good Glow this season. I love quality ingredients when it comes to my food, and lots of you will know that I am most happy in the kitchen. So how did I use Skyr this week? Well, this week's recipe is healthy ice pops for the kids. It's that time of the year where every time we go to a shop, Pia is on the hunt for an ice pop. So I always make sure to have healthy homemade ice pops in my freezer. And this week I made them from Skyr, natural and fruit. They're so easy to make, a great healthy snack for the kids, especially this time of year. So if you want to make them yourself, head over to thegoodglow.ie for this week's recipe. And don't forget, you can pick up an 850 gram tub of Skyr Natural in stores nationwide. So, okay, so Sa, I'm asked my, if you have negative thoughts, like standing at your kitchen sink, what should you do?
Look, it comes down to stop reacting to your thoughts and start responding to your feelings. What I said earlier, you know, let go of the story and deal with the feeling, it goes, it's the same thing here. We go back to that. It's just layers and layers deeper into the same concept here. It's stop reacting to your thoughts and start responding to your feelings. What you're going to see when you are in the kitchen sink, washing dishes and feeling lonely, and actually you're not even realize that you're lonely because the stories in your mind is, oh, I'm not good enough. I never do anything right. No one likes me. I'm unlovable. I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. Look at this job thing. Didn't work out. My career sucks. I don't, blah, blah, blah. The stories. Go to the feeling in the body. The feeling saying, connect. You're lonely. Reach out. Now, the problem is we have been socialized and highly trained to be disgusted by the word need. We must engage with the word need with love and care. We must understand that the word need is a freedom word. It's a word that sets us free. So next time you feel like you're losing the plot, that you are down on yourself, look at your phone, engage with someone, make a contact with another person, say, I need connection. I need a friend. And notice how vulnerable that is. Even as we're saying it, we're like, no, I can't do that. Why? Because we're trained to be individual. We're trained to do it alone. We're trained to say, you needing somebody is a weakness. We shouldn't need anybody. We should do it alone. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a perpetual lie that's making us stuck and making us sick. It is vital that we reach out, that we make friends with the word need. In the book, there is research called, it's called the Dunbar research. And Dunbar, this man put together this research, and his study shows that we can only truly cognitively know 150 people. So when you think about people with like large followings or celebrities who are known all over the world, it's all this, it leads us to believe that it's possible that we can know more people than 150 people, which is all a lie. Now, so listen to this. From 150, he talks about within that 150, there's a group of 50. Within that 50, there's a group of 15. Within the 15, there's a group of 5. Now, let me break this down to you. This is why I'm saying this, because I need everybody who's listening to start to strategize and become very clear in who are in what circle in your life. 150 are the people who are going to show up for the once in a lifetime event, a funeral or a wedding. The 50 are the people who are going to come to the big birthday bash. Your 40th, any big birthday bash that you're throwing, that's when you're going to get, that's the people within the circle that are going to show up within that 50 circle. Now, if you go a layer deeper, the 15 are the people who know you really well and you know them really well. These are the people that are going to show up for you when you're going to chemotherapy. These are the people who are going to babysit your kid. These are the people who are going to fly across the country or across the world when your mother dies. Now, within the 15, there's the 5. The 5 is your partner, perhaps your family. And within that 5, it is vital that you have people who can hang out with you in the plane of secrets. What does that mean? They know the ins and outs of your story and they will never manipulate it against you. The plane of secrets is where when you tell someone, I did this really awful thing, I'm not proud of, I really regret doing that, they're able to listen without judgment. They're able to listen without criticism. It's the therapist's heart, right? They can hold on, they can listen to anything and you do the same for them. Within that 5 is where you have those people. So what I want everybody to focus on, who is listening, is to focus on the 5. Who are the core 5 and who are the core 15? And in the book, I have specific practices to help you identify who the core 5 are and the core 15. Make a point to nurture those relationships. Because if you look at statistics in America, over 60% of young adults reported feeling serious loneliness. Over 60%. That's insane to think of it. We are underestimating the fact that friendship is food for the body, food for the mind, and food for the soul.
What happens if somebody that you love, so you can live with somebody and feel lonely. So say your partner, your lover, your, you know, comes to you and says, I need you, but I don't feel like you're seeing that.
This happens a lot everywhere. The thing about loneliness is that there's two main kinds of loneliness, right? The true isolation kind where you have no one around, or the most prevalent one, which is I have people around, but their relationships are not meaningful. We don't know how to connect with each other because we're distracted. Distraction is the ultimate culprit to lack of connection. You need to establish points of contact in your day. You need to establish points of intimacy in your day, in your life, where you've put your phone away, and you don't just put the phone away and says, let's connect. You have to put your phone away for 30 minutes to an hour before you can actually come deep into your body, before you can get into your heart, before you can actually like see another person. We are so desensitized with how we feel. We don't know how we're feeling. Imagine how another person is feeling. You know, we have an epidemic of homelessness in America and an epidemic of lack of care. Look at the celebrities of our world. They're not caretakers. We're not putting on the cover of magazines people who are caretakers, who are frontline workers, who are the healers working and to help people who are out on the field, working with the sick and dying, working with the unhoused. And I'm not asking for a magazine cover. Thank you very much. I'm just saying we need to celebrate caretakers. Why? Because these people are no longer desensitized. They have been so sensitized to their own suffering that they know what's going on for another person. We must do such a good job at being so deeply in our bodies that our empathy is turned on. And our empathy is turned on to such a point that it becomes compassion, where it leads you to reach out, that leads you to help the other. Now, one thing that happens so often is our misinterpretation when someone doesn't say, or doesn't reach out, doesn't do the things that we want them to do when we want them to do, because we expect them to read our minds and know how we feel when we don't even know how we feel, right? Yeah. We then punish people. Our partner doesn't show us affection, doesn't show us love, doesn't ask how our day was, doesn't make us breakfast, doesn't give us a head massage, doesn't make love to us anymore. We punish them in all these little sneaky ways. We might not even be, we might say, no, I don't. So notice our inability to address our needs. Notice our inability to say, hey, I no longer want to hurt you. I want to show up in a new way. I want to engage in practice to help us to connect. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it makes so much sense, everything you say. Before you go, what time are we at? Before you go, you said, I have a few notes written down here. Oh God, jeez. Which question am I going to ask you?
Ask.
There's two. Is there something physical that we can do if we're feeling negative thoughts?
Goes back to what we said earlier. It's under feeling. What are you not feeling? What happened in the past that you haven't processed yet? Every challenging experience that we go through in our lives leaves an emotional residue in the body. And unless we have the time and the tools, the community to pause and process what happened as it happened, it will leave an emotional residue in our bodies, and it will mess up with our psychology, which means what? It will mess up with our thinking.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to fight back the thoughts, talk back to the negative thoughts, go to the body where the feelings are alive. Where is the grief from that one time? Where is the abandonment from that one time you're rejected? Where is the anger from that heartbreak that you never felt? Instead of feeling, we become busy. Instead of feeling, we produce, we distract. The capitalistic God says, produce, 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 do, 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 do. Don't stop to feel, only do. That's the problem, you know? But start with learning about the importance of connection, because a lot of our needs stems from, a lot of our imbalances and hardship comes from our inability to say, I need a friend.
Give me one thing that you do every single day, no matter what.
Look, it's so boring. I wish it was like cool and esoteric and mystical. I sit down in my meditation cushion and I make friends with my breath, and I greet the feelings in my body, and I engage with my inner world, the part of me that no one has access to besides myself. you know, it's so, I wish it was like more mystical than that. I wish it was like a fire ritual when whatever it is, but it's not. It's so simple. And after that, I get on my somatic activated healing mat, which is big and round in my living room, and I do breath to movement. I partner specific movements that are associated with specific emotions, and I partner them with the breath, and I just go through a flow. Mm-hmm. It's like a yoga practice. It's like a yoga practice, we can say. That's easy for people to understand.
Yeah. It's amazing. I've seen your Instagram page at your mat. It's so cool and your house is so gorgeous. thank you so much. You have to come to Ireland one day and do this all live and bring your amazing energy to this country. Because
let's do it. Let's do it.
Thank you. This has been 18 months in the making, but it was meant to happen today. Just in this time of my life. And thank you so much for everything you brought to this conversation.
I'm so honored to be here. And thank you for your patience. And thank you for your great questions and your beautiful energy. I'm so grateful. Thank you. Thank you. Really, thank you.
Well, what did you think of that? Thank you so much for tuning in. I cannot wait for your feedback. And I've been practicing this week, and it's really changed how I'm rolling through life. So a huge thank you to Sa. And as I said, I just can't wait for your feedback. So when I was editing this, I was like, did I just keep asking him the same question over and over again? But I really wanted him to explain it so well so that it really stuck with us. So feel the feelings, no stories needed. And that is how we process properly. But then I was thinking, but then what? So you're sitting with your feelings. How do you process? So Sa says you can do it in four ways. Through movement, so like shaking it out. Through meditation, just staying focused in the present moment and rooting yourself down into your body. Through breath work, you can process out those stagnated emotions. And through affirmation, we can rewire our brains towards growth. So those four things that you can do when you're sitting with those feelings. That's it from season 15 of The Good Glow. This has been wild. I'm so grateful for 15 seasons of The Good Glow. Thank you to you for listening, for everything you bring to this podcast, for engaging with the social media posts, for leaving me lovely comments. Every single one of them is so, so appreciated. If you want to come out, join our run club, run with us through the summer, please sign up through the link in the show notes, and we'll send you all the information each week about our runs. And we've been sold out of Chicago for the last couple of weeks, but we've secured some more passes. So if you want connection, joy, friendship, all the great things that Sa talks about, why not come run a half marathon with us in Chicago in September? This trip is going to be out of this world. And I've also left details in the show notes, or head over to thegoodglow.ie for more. Thank you for tuning in. I'll see you very soon.